You could even go to a site like Answer the Public.
You can even use it for your topic and title. You can use it for video titles. You can use it for like basically really honing in on which are the most popular and which ones do you feel comfortable answering right away without having to think about it. Those are really easy videos to make.
It's time for the Video Marketing Value Podcast. My name is Dane Golden from the Video Marketing Business Academy. I'm here with excellent hosts, Gwen Miller from Hearst. Welcome, Gwen.
Thank you, Dane. Always the highlight of my week to be here.
And welcome, Shelley Saves the Day.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here.
And today we are talking about how to find the right topics for YouTube videos of your business. And I'm here with myself, Dane Golden, Shelley Saves the Day, and Gwen Miller. And Gwen Miller, we heard some secret information from YouTube themselves about how to start a channel of any sort, but we'll think of it for a business. There's something I hadn't heard before. What did you hear?
Okay, so this is something I recently launched a new kind of a new channel, and we checked in with YouTube like we always do on like what are your recommendations for launching a channel. We expected to hear the same things, but they actually had a new and novel way to launch a channel, which we did launch the channel that way, and I ended up really liking it. But I was extremely skeptical at first.
Oh,
but the more I think about it, the more I think they're right. And now I don't want to say this is like the only way that YouTube is recommending launching channels.
Anyway.
Like, I have talked to other people at YouTube who hadn't even heard of the strategy before, but we have a very experienced partner manager, and this is exactly what she recommended, which is, you know, typically we would launch, you know, how we used to launch channels was you'd put up a trailer for a week ahead of time, and then on the day of you release an episode, then you go into your regular cadence. Say it's weekly Wednesdays at 9 a.m. PST. Every Wednesday we go up with an episode, right? And it's just like any normal, you know, like cadence for your channel. What they recommended, which I was first like, and now I think is brilliant, is when you first go out, first of all, don't do that lead-in trailer week. There is no content there. You don't want to drive people to an empty channel. And then second of all, start out with multiple episodes on your channel. Typically, this seems counterintuitive because typically, like one of the biggest mistakes a lot of businesses make when they have an existing YouTube channel is bulk uploading content at the same time, right? They
usually just kind of after the channel's already after it's
correct.
Already going.
Exactly. After it's going, that's a big no-no. It's a huge thing we tell all businesses. It's like you're tempted to like put up all your like conference footage and all that sort of stuff up on the channel all at once. But what you're doing is cannibalizing your marketing period to your core existing audience. And they're not going to want to click on 6 videos at one time. You're diluting your CTR and YouTube's going to be like, ooh, this must not be good content. But this does not apply when you first launch a channel. Why is that? Because you don't have a core audience yet, right? You don't have subscriber base built up to have that problem. What you have is a lack of information. Specifically, YouTube has a lack of information about your channel. So they don't have a lot of data to know who to put your content up for. So if you start out with a nice bunch of videos that YouTube can go essentially shop for an audience, you will get to growing that core audience faster. But the more important reason is, and I've known this for a while, that how people make subscription decisions is not off a single video. It takes several touch points for them to decide to subscribe. So if you only have one video up there, they go watch it, be like, maybe, maybe not. They may never come back again to make that subscription decision, right? But if there is, you know, 4, maybe 5 videos up there, they recommended up to 10 if you're a high volume channel, but I think you could get away easily with 3 to 5. They're then able to go to that channel. And even if they don't watch all 5 videos, they can see the topics and know, oh yeah, that's interesting to me. That's interesting to me. I think this channel has more for me to offer. Then after that, only do that for the first week. Then you go back into your regular cadence because now you have a core audience to market to. But initially, starting out with a nice grouping of videos can help your channel grow a little bit faster at the beginning.
And I'll say that, you know, for the longest time, I had declined to work with any business YouTube channels that were starting from scratch. And the reason that I declined to do that was because they hadn't gone through the pain yet. They hadn't done it wrong yet. And there's this sort of a sweet spot for a business doing it, having small failures or small successes rather than a big failure or even a big success. That sort of in-between part where they're still committed and they keep making videos. And that's been my sweet spot until now. I'm really taking on more training of businesses that are really starting from scratch. And I hadn't really thought too much about that kernel of what to do. Now, for someone who really hasn't done, see, you're starting with generally with a group of people who already know how to make YouTube channels, just haven't started one in a while. I generally am working with businesses that are coming to it like, hey, we need a camera and a mic, and what should we say? And I think we can come up with, because we've talked about, you know, the Marcus Sheridan 10 questions your business always gets asked. Mm-hmm. That's a great way to have come up with those 10 videos right away before you even launch.
Yeah. And I would argue, I would see that's a good argument for like, hey, you are really just a baby at this. Maybe you want to start at the lower end of that spectrum doing 2 to 3 videos, because what you don't want to do is get so far ahead, because you're going to learn so much by putting up that first video or two. Like, you're going to revamp everything you're doing. So if you are 10 to 15 videos already shot in the bank, like, then that time to iterate is so much longer, you know? So I think you're absolutely correct to say there might be difference here for an experienced team launching a channel versus you're just kind of at an early stages experimenting.
I'm not so sure. I think we can help them come up with some basic videos to start with, some basic topics. As long as the topic's right, I think we're going to try this for some people. And Shelley saves the day. If you were starting a new channel today, would you do it this way? Would you bank 10 videos on a topic?
I might not bank 10 videos, but I would definitely probably start with about 5 videos. And I think, you know, some people will go out and say that when they're starting a brand new Instagram or social media page, a lot of the time they'll actually do like 9 posts, because it's about as much as you see of someone's profile before you would actually have to start scrolling. So there's this kind of rule of the first 9. So I could see that also being a thing with the rule of the first, you know, 5, because if you did a playlist of some kind and added all those videos to it, you only get about 5 videos on screen before you scroll into more videos. So I would go with enough to fill up the screen on a playlist, which is around 5 on that first initial drop. And then I would go back to a cadence of 1 or 2 a week consistently after that.
The rule of 9 from Shelley Saves the Day. And by the way, I forgot my ironclad rule today. Whenever we do a live stream, is I always plug in my Ethernet, and I forgot today. So if there's any herky jerky, I'm seeing Gwen is a little bit herky jerky. I don't know if she plugged in her Ethernet cable today.
I'm plugged in now, maybe, and my Wi-Fi is off.
Maybe it's
she looks
because
perfect to me.
Maybe it's because I'm not getting full bandwidth. So I apologize in advance. And we have some nice commenters. Jacker Cracker says, Dane, how's Mr. Beast doing? I assume you're equating me to Mr. Beast, and I'm doing just fine. I don't know Mr. Beast personally, so I don't know why that question. But we'll just say you think I'm Mr. Beast, and I'll say thank you. So let me ask you this, Shelley Saves the Day, when you're talking to people, what about when you're choosing topics? How do you choose? How do you decide what those topics are? Let's say you've been doing the channel for a while and you have some data. How do you figure out, if somebody asks you to advise them, what topic should I talk about on my channel?
Well, I think that you had kind of hit it, and we had talked about it once before as well, with like, what videos do I start with? And those frequently asked questions are so important, because especially if it's a brand or business and you are hopefully reaching people who are interested in your product or project, a lot of the time they have the same questions. And so if you can almost play offense with it and be like, here are some questions that you might have and let me answer them where they don't have to be looking for it. They feel more reassured. They feel like you're more professional. They feel like, oh, they're thinking about all the angles. So I think anything that helps clarify the message of what it is your company or product does or who it helps is always going to be a good place to start.
Right. And again, those 10 questions, Marcus Sheridan was one of the first, he was the author of You Ask, They Ask, You Answer, which is a great way to approach your YouTube strategy for business. People have questions. They have questions sometimes you maybe feel uncomfortable asking or answering, like, how much does it cost to do something? What's the average price? He just said, you know what? We're just going to tell them. We don't want to be secretive about how much it costs. In that case, they were a nationwide pool company, makes pools. Let's just tell them what it is. Then they've answered. Now they don't feel we're being secretive about anything. And those types of questions, people really do want to know. And you know what? One of the ways we help businesses learn what types of questions people are asking about their industry, we just go on the Google search questions and we go to those people always also ask. And if you sort of click on one of them, it sort of expands and adds more questions. Each time you click on one, it adds more and more questions. And we've actually recommended, hey, pick the top 10 of these and say, and just answer the top question. Just do a one video, just answers the top 10 questions about what people want to know about topic X. And you can granularly solve that and go into different verticals. And that's just a great way of finding those questions and answering, because they really are, Google said, those are the top 10 questions.
You could even go to a site like Answer the Public, where you kind of type in a query and they give you all kinds of different ways to ask that question, or supplemental types of questions that follow up around it. So it kind of answers the who, what, where, when, why, how many, how come, why now. And it really just kind of helps you, and it gives you this visualized graph of like, what is it that people are asking? And then you can even use it for your topic and title. You can use it for video titles. You can use it for like basically really honing in on which are the most popular and which ones do you feel comfortable answering right away without having to think about it. Those are really easy videos to make and bust out.
Gwen Miller, how do you decide what topics to make on a channel? What's your process when saying, great, we're going to do this. Do you, and I'm going to ask a question that you're going to say, we don't do this. Do you just say, we want to win search on YouTube and that's our goal? What do you do? How do you find what the terms people want to know in your audience, or decide what to do?
Well, I think it always, you know, and there is a difference, you know, figuring out where to start is a lot different than once you're going, it becomes a lot easier, because at the end of the day, it's all about what audience am I targeting, right? You know, it's not enough to be like, I want to win at search. Like, you have to know who's searching. Like, it's always, everything about YouTube comes down to knowing an audience, right? And even YouTube is designing their algorithm around this, right? YouTube has expressly stated that they're trying to find matches, like they're trying to find audience matches for you and your channel. So if you don't understand who your audience is, YouTube's not going to understand who your audience is, and they're not going to know who to show your channel to. So always start from who's my audience and what do they want to know and what are they interested in? And there's a lot of ways. Now, obviously, you know, if you're a very strict how-to business, that becomes a lot easier. You probably see every single day what type of customers coming in the door, and you can ask them, right, what questions they have. Now, for other things, if you're doing something that, say, is a little bit, you're a business, but maybe it's more entertainment, entertainment based, maybe you're doing the Red Bull strategy where they're not going out there and asking the Red Bull, you know, customers, like, you know, what is your biggest questions about Red Bull, right? You know, they're doing more an entertainment advertising strategy. And in which case, you know, they probably were like, okay, like they're aiming at 18 to 24 year old men. And what sort of topics is, you know, can we associate with our brand that would do really well? And they very much found their niche, right? And in the initial days of Red Bull, it was a little less like, now, you know, exactly, we all know exactly what we're going to get when we watch a Red Bull video. That wasn't the case in the early days, right? They experimented a little bit more, and you're going to have to do that. So really, you're going to have to pick the audience. you know, and then do some research. Like, you know, we do a lot of research for us to be like, okay, we know what are 18 to 24 year old women watching right now? What fits with our brand that we're coming up with? What will make a cohesive whole? Let's find, I don't know, to the point of like 10, what we usually do, like what's our 10 first ideas, right? And making sure we're hitting on a variety of things so we can start to A, figure out which topics seem to be resonating, but B, set the expectation in our audience's mind that this is going to be a channel that isn't focused on one thing. If your first 10 ideas are food, guess what? You're a food channel. Congratulations. You never get to do anything else, right? So you're setting expectations that we may touch on a little bit different areas around kind of that this audience, and it has to be the same audience to be interested in. You can't say vintage sewing on one hand and then on the same channel put up like WWE wrestling commentary videos. There's a very small audience that is interested in both. But if you have a unified audience, you have a little bit of permission to play as long as you play early on to give them the expectation you're going to be experimenting a little bit. And then you'll find, you know, oh, this topic area, like, no, is a no-go. And you can't make that decision off of one video. You have to put up, several. I like four to have four up. And then you can start to hone, lean into places that seem to be working, lean away from some of the things that you've tested at least four times and the audience is just absolutely not interested in it.
And I want to share a little bit about our approach when we start working with a business. Usually someone brings us on, they've been experimenting with YouTube a bit as a business, and they're just not getting enough, and so they bring us on. One of the things we ask them is, what is it you're trying to help the customer understand? Because mostly we want to make videos that the customer would want to know how to do, something the customer would want to know how to do if they didn't know our business existed. So it's not about, hey, we provide this service rather than this service. Most people don't want to know what our service is, and they can figure that out somewhere else, frankly. We only really want to talk 20% of the time about us, the business. 80% of the time, we want to talk about our specialty in the industry. So something that whether you do business with us or someone else, what would you want to know? And that's how we start going about it. And actually, our why statement, I don't know what you guys call it, the why statement or the convert statement or the subscribe statement. We say, just for my business, for instance, my name is Dane Golden from the Video Marketing Business Academy, where we help you up your game on YouTube for Business and transform your viewers into loyal customers. So that actually tells us, oh, well, that's our mission. That's also why someone would subscribe. That may not be exactly what we sell. So what are the videos that sort of emanate from that? Well, there's the 10 questions. And then we start looking for what associates with that. And we can talk about tools later. Shelley saves the day. How would you do it differently?
Well, I think sometimes what we get wrong is that we always jump to provide a solution or shoehorn how our brand or business might be a solution to people who may not have yet identified exactly what their problem is. So, right, if you go to the doctor and they say, well, put your arm in this cast, and they're like, but you never asked me any questions. Actually, my knee hurts and it's a back issue or something. And so we haven't done a very good job of asking the right questions, making sure we're in the right audience, making sure that we're looking at humans and not animals, you know, whatever it is, that we're talking to the right people. And I feel like sometimes you have to do videos that are a little bit adjacent to what it is that you offer, but it still is the same person, if that makes sense. So we have to be able to identify what it is that is ailing them. Why is it that they can't seem to run as fast, or why they can't, walk as far as they used to, and then identify backwards. Oh, you know, like it's really more focused outwardly on providing a solution after you've identified what the ailment is by getting to know your person versus just saying, this is the thing that you should do or take or buy or be or have. And they're like, I don't even know if I need that. And so there's a difference, because I think a lot of people, when they get on, YouTube or anywhere else. It's just about, I'm going to tell people what I do. I'm going to tell people, you know, whatever this is. And it's me. Look at how shiny, and then the right people will find us. And that's not sometimes how it works. I think the great brands are the ones who identify, like, you're tired of feeling like this, or, you know, the ones like the medications, right? Like, you can't go to your kids' basketball games. You can barely get out of bed. And that is more identifying the need, that internal struggle that people are having. Like, I am, you know, having difficulty doing this. I do want to be more involved with my family. I don't understand why I feel like this. And then all of a sudden they hit you with the Abilify is the drug that can help you do this and all the legal jargon afterwards. But there's a difference, is first helping to identify the problem that exists so that the person can recognize it, and then being able to then offer in a solution that might help with that problem is a approach I think that a lot of brands should take that they don't take.
Yeah, I think a lot of the times too, you have the temptation to go on YouTube and hard sell and really sell, right? Like, not only are we the solution to this problem, we're the perfect solution to this problem. And that's really boring for people, and they don't really feel very connected. I love the brands who like are not insecure enough to solicit feedback. So they're secure enough to solicit feedback, right? Which is like, hey, there's this problem out here. We're trying to fix it. I don't think we have it perfect yet. Here's what we got. Can you be part of the process? Then suddenly people are running. This is why, like, you know, Kickstarter stuff works so well, right? Because people feel they're in the ground floor. They feel like they're kind of involved from the beginning. And so if you do have a nascent business or any business, because every business is always ideating, that it's key to make sure that the audience doesn't feel like you're coming here to hard sell them, but you're coming here to solve a problem with them. And then they're going to be very excited when you perfect that solution.
Yeah. And I feel like, remember a few episodes back when Phil was here, you know, and we were talking about what's the right mix for injecting some of us into, you know, videos as a brand or business, getting to know us as the people behind the brand versus just what we offer and how it might help and fit into the shoehorn thing. And I think it's a really important balance that a lot of people don't think about, because you will have the brands that are all personality and you don't even know what they do. And then you have brands that are only, you know, online, and they're so cut and dry that it's just like, it's not any fun. It's like, I get it, but like, I want to enjoy the experience of, you know, this process and this product as well. So I think it's interesting when brands do tend to like get that happy medium.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, to take an example from my actual job, we were actually discussing this today, this idea of authenticity when you are a corporation and a brand. And, you know, like a lot of what we're known for at Hearst, for a lot of our brands, say like Good Housekeeping, is that we do essentially, we have test labs, right? Where we're testing out products and making sure that it's the best product for you. So like we're about to do, this isn't a big secret, I'm not ruining anything, big secret. We're about to get into betting really hardcore. Like it's betting season here for us. Like we're doing a whole thing in the test lab about the best betting. Mark your calendars for like late March. It's going to be great, everybody. But it becomes a thing of like, you know, do you go for the level of authenticity where you're like in someone's house doing it? And I actually went the other way. Because typically I would say if you're like just a publishing company without a test lab like we have, but you're just like trying to faux like an apartment, nothing's worse than the fake sets made to look like an apartment. Everybody can see through that a million miles. Like nobody's buying that. But I'm like, hey, just own it, be transparent and be like, we're now in our test lab and we're testing out all this stuff. And then you get that wonderful Bon Appetit effect, right? Where it's like, oh, you're hanging out with them while they're going through this process. They're giving you the backside. It's not just a minute long Consumer Reports video that tells you the results. Like now we can embrace the fact that, yeah, this is a lab. This is not your bedroom. But that's because we are doing a scientific process that's going to help you. But we are real people in this test lab, and we're going to hang out with you while we do it. So that is kind of our approach to kind of get around that question of corporate authenticity versus phoning us into something that we're not, which is the average YouTuber in their bedroom.
Right. And you think every company kind of has that. You have like the test viewers of television shows, right? And they test out these two different endings. And it's like, oh, this makes me hate the character. I can't, you know, we can't do this or something. And I think the transparency of having like the test laboratory thing too, is it gives not only legitimacy, but it addresses the elephant in the room. Like, we know this isn't a fake set. We don't want to do that. But we also don't want to have it be so sterile that you're like, why are we here? No one would ever live here. You're like, you're right. No one would live here, but this is what we're doing. And then if you invite them into the process, it's like, okay, we would probably never have furniture here. Would you? Right? Because this doesn't make sense. I was just thinking of the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, where she, in the last episode, was rearranging furniture in her room because she wanted it to feel different. But then impracticality is like she keeps stubbing her toe or tripping over things because things aren't where they should be. And so I think even when you bring attention to that, you're like, hey, would you do these sheets or these? Or like, you know, if it doesn't have the extra deep pocket, you know, all of a sudden this isn't practical, or all of a sudden it won't hold on the corner, and like this is all real stuff, right? And so when you have the experiences that is real, even in a set that isn't, as long as you address that it isn't real, I think it's
correct. Yeah, exactly. People aren't stupid.
And wanted to add, so we have Architectural Sheet Metal 101 in the chat who asked, couldn't the well-performing videos in your library be a good place to start looking for good video ideas, because data doesn't lie? And I have some ideas about this myself. And Gwen Miller, should you just look and see what's working and roll with it?
Yeah, I think, again, that's the advantage of having a channel that has some videos on it, and is also kind of the advantage of that mass upload strategy at the beginning. You get a lot more data a lot more quickly, right? You know, and you get to start to see, like I always like to say, a couple of caveats when you're working with data. One, make sure you have enough data. Do not make any decisions off of like one data point, because like that's, there is so many factors in any single video that could be influencing the performance of that video. To really make a, like, I will never do this again, or I'm all in on this, you need to get a couple more data points. I like 4 data points before I make major decisions, to really be able to feel a little bit more confident that you've honed in on the thing that is making the difference in that video. The second thing I will say when you look at your data to make content decisions is, do not just look at overall views. That can lie a lot. And here is why. Your new viewers who come in are always going, I'm going to say always, there's a couple channels where this isn't true, but typically there's more of them than your returning viewers. Even if you have a very dedicated audience, you're going to have, you know, there's just more new people in the world than the people who've actually seen your channel before. And in which case, what can happen is the new viewers can come in and flood and dilute the data of your returning viewers. So you could actually have a video that your core audience hates, and actually they unsubscribe after they watch it, but that's been drowned out because all you're looking at is look at all these new viewers coming in. And that can get very dangerous for the overall health of your channel. So I recommend that you have a holistic view of your data, be going in and checking where your returning audience is coming and where your new viewers are coming, and making sure your average view duration is looking good. And then, yes, then the next thing is to follow the data and keep following that as long as you're looking at it holistically. And but Dane, what is your special sauce?
I will
for
say
this?
No. Don't.
I say no. It depends.
Although I do like the 4 data points formula. And we're going to just keep coming back to that anytime, because I'm going to say whatever the question is, Gwen. I'm going to say, Gwen, what are your 4 data points on that? Because I know you've got them. So, yes, and if that's the right topic, if that is the right topic, for instance, we all know a channel that just did a one-off at some point or whatever, and that was the video that just got millions and millions of views. And Shelly, I'm going to ask you that question about that one channel that did the wrong video that you talked about recently. But and I'll just say, I worked once for a very big nonprofit, American nonprofit, and they had this old SpongeBob SquarePants from like 2007 on their channel that had millions and millions of views and had nothing to do with driving the right kinds of viewers. And we work with a lot of channels where they're not happy with what type of business they're bringing in from the videos they're doing. So they're getting great views, fantastic views, right. Great comments, and it's not driving business. And I come in, I say, listen, we're coming in with a strategy. We're going to do something different, and we're going to get less views. I'm not promising more. I promise you less views, at least for now, because some of your viewers are not going to like these new topics that we're going to get, but these are more catered towards what your customer wants to know. And when I say what your customer wants to know, I don't mean necessarily what your services are. I mean, how do they solve problems with products or services like yours in general? So what is that knowledge that you know that they want to know that doesn't have to do with selling them? But Shelley, I wanted to go with you and say, wasn't there something you talked about how someone did the wrong video on a channel once?
Yeah, in fact, so my answer on this is, as always, it depends. It depends on a lot of factors, but one of the things is I had an interview with my friend Christina Smallhorn, who has a real estate channel, and one of her videos that first really blew up her channel was how to remove dog pee smell from a carpet while you're prepping your home for sale. And it got a ton of views, and she didn't want to be known as the dog pee carpet lady. Right. Well, I don't think anybody does unless you probably have a carpet cleaning business. But she had to realize those viewers are not the same viewers as the ones who were maybe interested in purchasing or buying a home with her. So and I've even had the same experience where I had a video go and do really well, which was about repairing the bottom of painting the red bottoms of some Louboutin shoes. I am not a fashion channel. I am not a DIY channel. And all of a sudden I'm selling hundreds of bottles of this red paint on Amazon. Great for views, great for maybe affiliate sales, but not at all what my channel is about. So having to continually drive traffic for the wrong thing on my channel is not a good thing. So that's where, to Gwen's point, if you say, hey, but this video has 70,000 views, you're like, but it's the wrong people because they want more of this type of content, which you're not going to give to them. So that's definitely a difficult thing. And I think we want to also separate at the beginning. The question for the live stream is, how do we get started in the beginning, maybe when you don't even have a catalog, which is different than if you have a catalog and the data is there in lies the answer. So two different strategies, because one is how do you launch and one is after you launch, how do you look at the data? And you have to be careful because when you first look at that data as well, there are a lot of things that affect it, whether it's seasonality or scandal of company or business or owner, and things like advertising. And so I always come back to, it depends.
And Shelley, yeah. I want to touch on a question for Shelley in the comments, sort of a challenge for Shelley. And this is actually a great way of explaining how you're changing your topics. Somebody said, hey, what's the deal with Shelley? She's got all these subs, but not a equivalent number of views that I would think would happen. So did Shelley go and buy subs, which of course we would never do, but that's actually an invitation to explain how you're looking for different topics. Right. So please explain the process you just went through in overhauling your channel.
Right. So I actually had done a live stream and I talked about this last week. I was saying it was blowing up basically everything my channel is known for, which was iMovie tutorials and apparently DIY Louboutin shoe repair and all of these things, which is, you know, so much of what my channel is known for. And I'm like taking a hard look and an inventory of, but what do I want to be known for going forward? And it would have been really easy to just be like, scrap it all, start a new channel. Let's not confuse things. But I was like, I think it's one, an interesting case story, and Gwen is going to dive in apparently in later in the data with me because she loves that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, here you go. There's the book blueprint of everything you can do wrong on a channel, on a single channel, all in one. Here you go. But also then really being like, okay, so I privated as of last week over 2 million views on my channel. And it was, I think I dropped 250 videos off of my channel. So anything to do with video editing, apps, smartphones, Final Cut Pro, iMovie, Instagram, so anything that has to do with not what I want to talk about now is pretty much gone off of my channel. And I said, and last week, it is going to get worse and continually not better, because I have said I at least would expect for the next 3 to 6 months that every time I put out a video, my views and subscribers will just go down, because as I put out more content that isn't maybe what originally people signed up for, they will unsubscribe from the channel. So it's going to take a while to normalize, but it's getting me closer to the audience that I do want in the future, which is talking about how you can take, it used to be, you know, how do you create content so you can share what you love with the world? Now it's, after you have content that shares what you love with the world, how can you monetize that?
Yeah. And I think also it's key that some subscribers will not unsubscribe. They'll just never click again. Right.
Yep.
So this is a problem that all kind of legacy channels have, right? If you've been on YouTube for over, you know, like 3 years, you have a lot of subscribers who are just no longer active. So it's one of the reasons that I rarely even notice people's subscriber base, because it doesn't mean a lot about their active audience. You always have to kind of look at the other metrics on a channel to be really like, this is the active channel. And if they're, I don't want to say you're geriatric, Shelley, but you didn't start in the last 6 months.
Nope.
So like you're changing your focus entirely. So yeah, it's like there are going to be, in an ideal world, they'd actually would unsubscribe and just stop cuddling up your subscriber number if they're not interested in your content. But that's not how people work. They're lazy.
So I'm going to put that out there, though, where it says, I must have bought views. I did not buy views. So, yeah, I did not buy views, but I did private all of them.
And I just want to comment on the compliment I received from Architectural Sheet Digest 101. Dane, nicely handled. Oh, on my question, yeah, I gave you that opportunity to demonstrate, turn a negative into a positive. But
I also want to circle back to the earlier Mr. Beast content, a comment, because he came later and said that apparently Mr. Beast follows you somewhere. Were you aware of this? What platform would that be?
Beast follows me?
On Instagram or Twitter? Which ones of the platforms can you see who they follow? Or is it one of these Mr. Beast bots that is like driving big creators on the internet crazy, is all the bots that are impersonating people? Maybe you have a following of a Mr. Beast bots, like you're popular with Mr. Beast bots.
I just have so many fans that I don't even know who they all are. And I can't be bothered to know if Mr. Beast follows me, frankly.
Correct.
But what a great YouTube channel. What an inspiration. All the amazing things that he does with his channel and his team. And if you are a business and really don't know what Mr. Beast means or what that channel is all about, you can learn a lot by learning how to engage people on YouTube, even if technically it's not a business-oriented channel. But hi, Mr. Beast. Thanks for watching.
totally.
He's hey, Jimmy.
Right now, I'm sure.
But I wanted to talk about how I know when you're changing, and Gwen, by the way, has said, correct me if I'm wrong, Gwen, you've said, if you're going to change the topic massively on your channel, you may just want to start a new channel. You've said that before. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to prove you wrong, and Shelley's trying to prove you wrong.
Well, and here's also the thing. It's a lot different if you are a corporation versus you are a person. Shelley's a person. Mm-hmm. Like, her channel is her. That would be a little bit weird. Like she's going to like go start the duplicate channel of her. It's a little bit different than, you know, I've worked for a lot of companies that really do want to take like, oh, we used to have a channel on this topic. Now we want to do a channel on this topic over here. And it's totally different audiences. And so they're like, well, we already have 50,000 subscribers over here. Let's just port them. I'm like, they do not port. Like they are there for a certain thing. But if you're a person, a part of the appeal of being a person on the internet instead of a corporation, and this is what corporations struggle with, is that there's a number of people who are there for you and your personality. And this is there is a high group, a percentage overlap between people who want to learn iMovie and people who are interested in being knowing the business of YouTube. So I think she's well positioned to keep her same channel personally.
But I wanted to add, here's an indication that I look for when I know we're starting to get traction on these new viewers and new topic. And finally, YouTube, after months, is starting to see, oh, now we know what the new stuff is about. what you see is you suddenly see a much greater than average view count in your new segment, in your new group of topics. But at the same time, you're seeing more unsubscribes per usual on that video. So actually, the way I think about that, if you're seeing more unsubscribes than usual, and yet your video is being shown to more people, YouTube has said, they're really starting to go after these new topics. Let's show it to more people. And of course, some of those people are your subscribers. And it's saying, let's talk about this video. Let's, as YouTube algorithm, let's show this to more people. And then somebody who's been your old viewer says, I don't want stuff like that. And that's actually, those unsubscribes is actually, net unsubscribes is a good
indicator. Those are good. Yeah, correct. Not only that, I wouldn't really care too much, because if you looked at my view to subscriber ratio, especially for my channel, it's probably, if you went lifetime, maybe you might get almost double digits. So I am such a I was such a heavily searched base, non-personality. And we've talked about that tons before, because I didn't interject any of that. And most of the time, it would be anywhere from 5 to 10% subscribers actually ever watching any of my content. They didn't come back. So I don't mind at all if my subscribers are also, I don't mean this to the five of you that are here, if they don't actually want to continue watching, because it wasn't a majority of my views. But I'm really glad with the ones that I have now that are sticking with me, because as we start to grow this community, I've always wanted to have that 1,000 true fans. And even with an audience size of, let's say, 40,000, I've never had that. So I'm starting with like, I'm really excited about it, you know, and a lot of people from the outside are like, oh, I don't know about that. I'm like, okay, well then don't do that on your channel when you get there. But for me, I want to go ahead and do it right now and see how it goes.
And I want to add about tools that we can use. All right. Can we talk about tools in the last few minutes of this show?
Yeah.
Because there's a number of tools to find out what types of topics to talk about. Again, the goal is not to rank number one anywhere, really, although that's a nice thing. Most of your traffic will come from people looking it on the homepage of the app or the website. That's called browse features, then suggested videos, then search, probably in that order. But those topics help you give you kernels of what types of things to use. Ladies, what type of tools do we use to find those topics?
I want to add a little bit to color to what you just said, Dane, in terms of why SEO can, search can help us figure out what might do well on home. Part of the reason for this is the kind of the algorithm behind the homepage is very much based on something called collaborative filtering, which is essentially saying, what are people like you watching? So like, what are other people that are similar to you watching? Maybe you're going to like it. We're going to put that in front of you. And how do they define what a person like you is, right? It's, have you watched the same videos? That's fairly obvious. It's demographics. So that is usually only initially when they don't know a lot about you, just knowing that you're an 18 to 24 woman. There's a lot of 18 to 24 year women like a lot of variety of stuff. But the other big one that they use, besides really what videos do you watch, is do you search for the same things? Like, are you searching for the same topics? So you're getting put in buckets based on what you're putting in that search bar. So knowing kind of this idea of what your audience is searching for can really help you in the process of figuring out what you can make to that would work on your homepage. There is actually in beta right now a tool from YouTube that would do exactly this for you. Oh. It's going to show you what your audience is also searching. And what my favorite part of the tool when I beta tested it was, they'll put up a little sign next to things that they're like, your audience is searching for this, and there's not very many good answers. So they're going to flag things for you that they're like, hey, we need more content over here. Can you make this for us? And that's a nice symbiosis where the platform's telling you where you have the most opportunity and the platform's getting great content in the process. I was like, this is going to be a great tool. Oh. Keep an eye as it rolls out into larger beta.
Yeah, I think it's a great great informational base, because a lot of the time creators are so in their heads about like, I don't know what to do, or I don't know, like you really have to go into the analytics, which I know you know how to do, but you know, to be able to filter down, like, what video were they watching before they came to one of your videos, right? And this helps if it's a lot based on like a search strategy, because it's a search based specific SEO heavy type of thing, or like, oh, they watched this, they didn't get the answer and they found your video. So I used to be able to base a lot of my tutorials that I used to make on iMovie about those types of things, because I could see it was green screen, it was this or that. And then I would be like, oh, not only that, but I can expand on that. And so that was interesting, but I always wanted them to go one step farther than the, your audience also watches these mm-hmm. channels, but now it's your audience also watched these like videos, which is just like such a game changer when it comes to like that kind of information. I think it's really helpful. And I'd like to see that more often. To answer Dan's question of what tools can you use, you've got things such as Google Trends. You've got things such as what your audience is already saying. You've got things such as like TubeBuddy that can help you with keyword research. So all of those are absolutely tools. Answer the Public, Help a Reporter, all of those services as well.
Fantastic. And we're going to have to leave it there. So sad. We're going to try again next week. This has been the, well, it's the Video Upstream. It's the Shelley Saves the Day stream. And it's also the Video Marketing Value Podcast, if you want to listen to this while you're driving, but don't watch the video while you're driving. Just listen to the podcast version. My name is Dane Golden. I want to thank Shelley Saves the Day. Thank you, Shelley.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Gwen Miller. We'll see you next week. Here's to helping you help your customers through videos.